Global Times noted, the recent fire in Hawaii has exposed several issues in the way the U.S. handles wildfires. Weak public awareness in reporting emergencies, failures in local warning systems, insufficient rescue forces, and weak mobilization capabilities. It is truly baffling that the administrator at the Maui Emergency Management Agency decided not to sound warning sirens when a devastating wildfire was ravaging the town of Lahaina. This also reflects the incomplete research, analysis, and consideration of disasters by the Emergency Management Department, analysts told the Global Times. Sadly, this is not the first time that the U.S. government has suffered huge tragedy resulting in mass casualties due to ill-equipped rescue mechanisms and poor rescue capabilities in natural disasters such as fires. In 2018, nearly 10,000 buildings in Paradise Town, California, were destroyed by wildfires. The town was home to 27,000 residents before it was engulfed in flames. About 80 people were confirmed dead, and nearly 1,000, including several Concentrians, were also reported missing, according to British media report on November 20 that year. The then U.S. President Donald Trump declared a state of emergency in California on November 10th. He blamed California's officials for wildfires. He described the situation on social platform. Billions of dollars are given each year with so many lives lost, all because of gross mismanagement of the forests. In recent years, the U.S. government has not placed as much emphasis on emergency rescue as it did before. By contrast, other developed countries have attached great importance to the development of emergency rescue capabilities. Moreover, these countries normally employ firefighters from local areas who are more familiar with local conditions in emergencies. For example, China has been making persistent top-down efforts in strengthening its comprehensive emergency response system to better tackle a variety of disasters and accidents. In the 2013 to 2021 period, the number of people dead or missing in natural disasters on average each year decreased by 87.2% compared with 2000 to 2012 period in China. China has also accelerated the transformation and upgrading of fire and rescue teams, creating over 3,500 professional teams specializing in water, mountain, and earthquake rescue and other emergency response fields. The slow response and insufficient mobilization capacity displayed by the U.S. government, as seen during many natural disasters and emergencies, have also made some people on the island of Taiwan have mixed feelings about the country's deplendability. On social media, some Taiwan residents called the Biden administration and U.S. Army cold-blooded. If the close-at-hand Moy Island was unable to receive support in time, how can the Tsai administration believe that the faraway U.S. Army would come and rescue Taiwan? One mocked at social media. Natural disasters and the situation in Taiwan Straits are two different things that are incomplete, commented a Chinese mainland research fellow on Taiwan studies. He told the Global Times, nonetheless, the fire has made some Taiwan secessionists realize that the U.S. is not as reliable as they expected. With power outages in the local area and no access to television or radio, residents of Mo'oi were reported to have received no text alerts or television or radio notifications, and that is according to media reports. To make things worse, local residents said that fire hydrants ran out of water, which hindered firefighters' ability to contain the fire. FEMA officials have also confirmed that there was an issue that affected the hydrant's water supply, and that is according to a report by CBS News on August 17th. Alan Dekar, a Front Street business owner, said he watched business after business in the historic district goes up in flames, while buildings on both sides of the most important business streets on Mo'oi were engulfed. There were no fire trucks at present time. Hawaii News now quoted Dekar as saying, "I think the fire department was overwhelmed." On social media platforms, including TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, many local residents on Mo'oi and opinion leaders in the U.S. criticized the U.S. government's lackluster rescue efforts. The website of the Federalist also noted, when word reached Biden about the deadly Mo'oi fires that killed over 100 people and left 800 more missing, he didn't rush to Air Force One and fly over the Pacific to the afflicted island. Instead, the 46th President of the United States spent yet another day neglecting his oath of office on a Delaware Beach vacation, where he offered reporters no comment about the hundreds of fire victims. After a brief appearance at the White House, where he once again refused to speak with reporters about the catastrophe, Biden jetted off to lunch at Lake Tahoe. The president eventually paused his elaborate state in Sierra Nevada Mountains to fly to Hawaii. When Biden finally arrived on the ravaged island 2 weeks after the deadliest wildfire in modern U.S. history started, he kicked off the somber visit by cracking several jokes about pavement and football. Biden's babbling only worsened when he turned a speech that was supposed to encourage the fire victims into a self-adulting laced with lies. He topped off his posturing with a quick nap during a service dedicated to honoring the people who lost their lives in Lahaina. Biden's slow, aloof response isn't just an offense to the people of Hawaii, which voted him into office. It's also a stain on his presidency and proves that his leadership is a liability. Leading a nation is not a game. Smoldering ruins are not a stage for the latest round of senile stand up. And Afghanistan, East Palestine, the border Mo'oi, and every other place recovering from ruin are no places for performative posturing. Hawaii certainly isn't the first time Biden has checked out during a crisis, and it won't be his last.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters from all around the world. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Viewpoint. I am Beta again here with you. And today I have the honor to have two dear guest speakers here with me, Brother Ali and Sheikh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome here in this studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for being here with me. And then, as you know, again, we're going to discuss something really interesting, and I want your viewpoint here on this topic, which is Arba'in. As all we know, Arba'in is a Shia religious observance that actually occurs 40 days after the day of Ashura. And it is one of the most important observances and rituals in Islam, I think, which actually indicates many principles of our religion to the world. And as you know, every ritual and every observance has many aspects to be discussed. And in this episode specifically, we're going to discuss three aspects of Arba'in, which are actually the political, social, and the cultural aspects of this ritual. Thank you, Sheikh Rouhani. So up to the things that you told up to here, we got two perspectives more than the others, like the political perspective that you mentioned, the unity that we can see in this actually observance. And the other one was the social one, that we can see all these Muslims united together, and this brotherhood that we can see in every Muslim that actually go for Arba'in commemoration. And another thing, which another perspective that I think we have to emphasize here, is the cultural perspective that should be highlighted here again. And Brother Ali, I want you to elaborate this perspective more.
Yes, as for a political, like any other political event that actually shows its fruit in the society, it can lead to the unity and unification of the Islamic Ummah. Also, it can show the security that is that exists in the country of Iraq. You know, some currents and some streams do not like Iraqis to live in security and peace.
Yeah.
So they want to justify their presence in Iraq with the motto of lack of security or insecurity in Iraq. But it shows that when you, which country can control, for example, a population of 20 million in a safe environment? So it means that they have a good security inside themselves if the others or foreigners let them leave.
Yeah.
So it shows their power and their own abilities and capacities. Again, it shows the empowerment of the Islamic Ummah in the shadow of unity, because as a respective, these are under the subcategories of the political, let's say, functionality of Arba'in. As I said, that we see this unity among the Islamic Ummah. One might say that all the Shias are there and they are collected from different parts of the world. So I think there are needed to be those who say such a thing are needed to be invited to see Arba'in from close, from near, to see where people are from. Are they really only Shias or not? I myself have witnessed Christians and the people from Ahlus Sunnah there. So based on reports that actually are issued from the both Holy Shrine of Najaf and Karbala, more than 60 nationalities, people from different religions and different denominations in religions, do participate in the ceremony.
Yeah.
So it does not mean necessarily Imam Hussein belongs to the Shias. No, Imam Hussein belongs to the whole world, to all freedom seekers of the world. So this shows a power for those who are against this sense and morale of freedom seeking. So it is sort of danger or threat for them. So they need to actually to cope with it in some sort of way. So this Arba'in by itself, again, continuation of this political functionalities, can create a stream flow in the Islamic Ummah or in the whole world. Anti-arrogance, the flow that can grow anti-arrogance to be created and show itself. But in a culture aspect of it, we can see the brotherhood of in the social and culture, I can call it sociocultural functions of Arba'in. We can see the relationships between the two countries like Iran and Iraq that has been, I can call it wounded at the time of war,
yes.
The imposed war between Iran and Iraq, and they can renovate, I mean, these relations. And I mean, again, Islam can be the common language between them rather than, I don't know, nationalism or other useless factors or symbols. The next, we have a concept of, I think, the next sociocultural function of it. I can look at symbolization. And look, in today's world, those who are familiar with the cultural attack of the West over the other, towards any other country, they can feel and sense that they have worked a lot on symbolization or making symbols of different concepts that usually leads to fake concepts or fake, let's say, religions or man-made religions. I even can say a bit frankly towards satanic teachings or satanic beliefs.
Yeah.
So instead of that wrong or wicked culture, we can have this beautiful culture where people are ready to sacrifice themselves for the sake of Imam Hussein, who has sacrificed himself for the sake of Allah. So ultimately it goes for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So people are ready to sacrifice themselves to give service to those who are coming for a pilgrimage. They don't care if you belong, for example, to this country or the another country. Are you, for example, Iranian, Afghan, Pakistani, Indian?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to them whether you are Christian or Muslim or Jew or any other follower of any other religion. So this kind of symbolizations are very important. And next we see the manifestation of religious and, let's say, religious teachings.
Yeah.
Whatever we have been studying at the time of the Prophet that has been said and ordered by the Holy Prophet, that these are among values in Islam. So you can sense them. You can see them, that they are happening there. This is not only sacrificing. I mean, this sacrifice actually can be seen in different aspects or dimensions of one's a person's life there in Iraq and in cities of Najaf and Karbala. That is Islamic ukhuwah, brotherhood, can be seen there. They are bringing whatever they have. Just, I mean, they really do not let anything for themselves at home. So whatever they have, this is what we have learned from Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, that we have in history that 20 times he sold all of his properties and just distributed them among the needy. So these are among the good akhlaq, good morality that we have learned from the Holy Prophet. The way that they talk together, the way that actually, exactly the same way that we have been ordered in Sunan al-Nabi,
yes.
That this is the sunnah or the conduct of the Prophet in this issue. So we are seeing them. So these are the cultural aspects or cultural functions of our
Thank you, Brother Ali. So you both mentioned some actually important facts, but one thing that I want to highlight here is that you mentioned that we can see these huge amount of people there from many religions, from many races, from many countries, even Christian people there. The last question in this episode that I want to ask you is that are we using this potential in Arba'in correctly? I mean, these huge population of people there, they can do many things. I mean, there should be many methods to actually spread these principles of Islam and Islam itself in this opportunity. But do we actually use this potential correctly or not? Brother, Sheikh Rouhani, or earlier?
Yes, of course, it's a really important question that should be addressed here. I think, yes, of course, you know, I think for the people who take part into this gathering, one of the really, really significant and crucial, let's say, lesson that they can take, I myself think it is the moral teachings of Ahlul Bayt and the moral teachings of Islam. Because in this Arba'in commemoration, what you see, what manifests itself in this gathering is the moral doctrines of Islam. For example, sincerity. If you really want to find sincerity or ikhlas or cordiality, you have to go to this commemoration, let's say, gathering, and see how the Iraqi people, not only Iraqi people and the other nations, how, in what way they serve the people, with what level of honesty, with what level of sincerity, I mean, ikhlas and simplicity, we can say. So I think whoever take part into this march and, let's say, walking, they, first of all, they take this lesson that Islam is the religion of mercy. Islam is the religion of morality and ethics. That is the reason that non-Muslims always take part and they gather in this gathering, yeah, because they see that they are served. I saw a clip was published by one of the Algerian, I don't know, or Tunisian brothers who were Wahhabi. And when he went to the Tunisian people and Algerian people in Algeria talking about Shiism, they were even trying to kill him. They didn't allow him to talk anything about Tashayyu or Shiism. Then he came to this Arba'in gathering and he was introducing himself that I am a Salafi, a Sunni, a Wahhabi maybe. And the people welcomed him very warmly, embraced him and served him, said that you are our brother, you are Anfusana, according to Ayatollah Sistani. And there's no difference between me and you, between us and you, you are our brothers. He was served, he was welcomed, he was embraced very with warmth, with let's say, kindness, with mercy. He published this video to the all people across the globe that, see, I was introducing myself to my Sunni brothers as a Shia. They were telling that we want to kill you. And then when I went to the Arab Inwak and introduced myself to the Shia people, among the Shia people, inside them, within them, they respected me, they served me with hospitality. And then, so this way, the Abu Abdullah al-Hussein's followers, they attract the attention of the people towards Ahlul Bayt, that Ahlul Bayt tell us that kunu lana zayna wa la takunu lana shayna. This is the way that we can teach the people their true moral teachings of Islam and Ahlul Bayt.
Thank you, Sheikh Rouhani. Unfortunately, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to add to whatever you both mentioned up to here is that there is this trend on Instagram and Twitter, wherever I see that, what is your love language? And I think it's an appropriate question to be asked here about our brain, which is, I think, the unity language, the love language, and, you know, the worldwide language spread out from Islam to the human being's heart. And, you know, they are all attracted to these and they are all understand it. And I think this is an amazing opportunity for every Muslim here to actually make this environment in our Arba'een walk and march for some other people from other religions to be attracted to the truth, the real and pure truth of Islam here. And thank you, both of you, for having your point of view and this important principle of Islam. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. It was all the time we had for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels cry, while innocent children die. Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry, ah, Hussein, ya Hussein, ya Hussein, this is Karbala. Zainab left her heart. She left her brothers in the dust. But there's much more pain to come. This is the road to Sham. Harqayya won't last long. The young daughter of Hussein, she won't make the journey home. She cries, Ya Hussein.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and here is Food for Thought, an interesting aphorism from the Holy Prophet's first infallible successor, the Commander of the Faithful and the Leader of the Pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Acquire wisdom and truth from whoever you can, because even an apostate can have them, but unless they're passed over to a faithful Muslim and become part of wisdom and truth that he possesses, they have a confused existence in the minds of apostates.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Digital footprint.
Part 3.
Disclosing digital identity does not always lead to psychological harm to children. Sometimes it involves crimes and abuse. In recent years, these issues have been taken to court. Sometimes parents unwillingly conspire with online predators by sharing their pictures. Sometimes even laws take their toll on individuals' privacy, especially in the US. According to the laws in the European Union, people can force search engines to remove the results related to them. But such a law does not exist in the US.
I think that in the coming years, we'll see more governments try to get involved. I think also, you know, more tech companies are realizing that users don't actually want this permanent record about themselves with all of their information dating back years and decades.
Although the freedom of the press in the U.S. has some positive aspects, it doesn't allow such laws to pass. That's why children's footprints on the internet are indelible. You might argue that the younger generations are not sensitive about their privacy, but studies have shown otherwise.
Things that are meant to be texted one-to-one, people tend to post online so 50 other people can see their plans for tomorrow or the next weekend. You could be doing something like that could potentially endanger yourself by making your account public and saying too much about where you live or who you are.
When I'm in like a cool location and I want to show everybody where I am, but most of the time I'll just tag where I am on like a Snapchat story so people can know.
What you share and how often you share is going to affect the way that somebody views you. Just because I'm going to post all the time, that doesn't mean that you're going to get all the attention. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to like you.
Observations confirm that younger users care even more about respecting privacy. The popularity of apps like Snapchat in the US is because of that. Younger users and teenagers choose the app because it keeps data for a shorter period of time. You can share your videos on the app for a specific time and they can't be recovered in the future. Steinberg stresses that children have the right to decide about their own privacy. She says children become aware of their own identity at the age of 4. The awareness can be a reason that parents should ask for their permission. They have to ask if the children allow them to post the pictures or the content. When parents talk to their children about posting the pictures on the internet, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't post them. Talking about it means that children will become more aware of their digital identity. It can give them the chance to think about different aspects of the internet and, of course, can serve as a great guide for their future in the digital world. Respecting privacy has to be a part of the education. A child who doesn't have good memories of their published pictures will probably violate other people's privacy when they grow up.
Could it be considered exploitation?
Oh, I'm sure it could. Anything could be considered exploitation. I know one thing for sure is that children don't need this amount of attention or money or toys to have a great upbringing. And so those things can distort. And you only have to look at all of the child actors and celebrities that have had difficulties through that.
What happens if or when people stop watching?
Well, that all comes down to parenting. They will, you know. Well, they won't necessarily. It's just that no one's going to watch a 22-year-old opening toys.
Children and the issues related to them continue to make headlines from time to time. The Dutch parliament has passed a law that obligates companies to prove that they don't employ children in their production chain. Any company that breaches the law will face restrictions in distribution of its product. Putting a ban on employing children is not limited to the Netherlands. In a recent case, an Irish singer has been convicted for using children for racketeering. Kelly brought his son William to the stage so they would sing a song together. The court issued a verdict that what he did was an example of abusing children for business purposes and he will have to pay a fine. There are similar laws that bar children's exploitation. But no one talks about the other types of exploitation. Even the laws have been stifled to serve the interests of major companies. In 1939, after the tragic incident Jackie Coogan experienced, a bill was passed, which is known as the Coogan Law, to protect children from abuse. The law stressed that employers should deposit 15% of the children's salary in a special account. The children will have the right to withdraw money from that account after they come of age. But even the Coogan Law isn't applicable to exploiting children on the internet. Now children work both in the real and digital worlds. In underdeveloped countries, children work with machineries, and in advanced countries, they work with computers. This is the age of child influencers. children like Ryan, Anastasia, and the boys of the Wixens family. The million-dollar question about them is, what Kukan asked himself? Parents do business with their children, but it isn't clear who their revenues belong to. The material and spiritual revenues are so interwoven with the children's privacy that it's really hard to draw a line between them. Some people have chosen the title Digital Child Labor for the subject. The borders between the rights of the children, parents, employers, and the audience are blurred and fuzzy. Their working on the internet has a misleading appearance, but in fact, it isn't different from working on the streets or in factories. It has given a completely normal face to their exploitation in the digital world.
She says she wants to be an actress when she grows up. But the question of exploitation has never been far from her mother Katie's mind.
There will be people out there, there will be a school of thought
yes.
that believes that this is wrong for a child to be on social media so young.
I think everyone has their opinion and the right to their opinion. And I still don't think it changes the fact that me and Daniel are really good parents and Ava's a very, very happy, well-adjusted child. And if she came to me and was like, I don't want to do this, it would stop. I don't want to cross the line where it could be considered exploiting. You know, I kind of let her control what goes on the profile.
What is that line? Where do you draw the line?
I guess, I don't know. I think it's different for everyone. Some people would think I am.
The court says presenting a child on the stage is against the law. But it doesn't say anything about the tech companies that take advantage of children's pictures. The laws warn against exploiting children, but they're silent about using the information about them for advertising on the internet. It seems some major IT companies, some laws, and some families are against children. Their privacy is breached under various pretexts. Their digital footprints are used as a tool for business, and their identity is a plaything to attract a larger audience. The consequences of the current situation will come to light in the not-too-distant future. Children's digital footprints left by other people will change their future, like what happened to the kid in Charlie Chaplin's movie.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers, dear sisters, salamun alaikum, and welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. You're listening to us from Iran. We're going to speak about comparison of this life and hereafter.
I pray to God, my heart, soul, and body, every single day. My life with every breath I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So please, you is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so, I love you so.
But first, we look at the calendar. Today, Monday, 11th of Safar 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 6th of Shahrivar 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 28th of August 23 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. For today, chapter Ar-Ra'd, verse 26 of the Holy Quran, we'll listen to.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. الله يبسط الرزق لمن يشاء ويقدر وفرحوا بالحياة الدنيا وما الحياة الدنيا في الآخرة إلا متاع.
Allah extends provision for whom He wills and restricts it. And they rejoice in the worldly life, while the worldly life is not, compared to the hereafter, except brief enjoyment.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
What is important is the fact that we must not feel rude and arrogant once our means of sustenance is amplified, forgetting everything, nor must we become disparate of everything when our means of sustenance is at stake, for the divine system is one which is based on His wisdom, Allah's wisdom, and has got trial bases, and it is not based on luck, chance, and good omens. Usually those who are affluent in their means of sustenance and are given sustenance in abundance tend to forget it and ignore the hereafter, sticking to the mortal world and its beauty, while this worldly life is nothing else but limited in its scope and is a mortal one as compared to the hereafter, for the latter is immortal.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I, when I have you, to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
During this week, and on this program, today's special, we'll look at comparison of this life and the hereafter. It has been related that the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace be upon him and his family, said, if the world of Allah was equal to a mosquito's wing, then he would not allow the disbeliever to have a sip of water from it. Living simply means turning away from the things of this world, because they are so worthless. You do not bother with them and remain detached from them. Being detached from this world does not mean that you should forbid what Allah has permitted, nor that you should squander money. Rather, it is a state in which you are more certain of what is in the hand of Allah than you are of what is in your own hands. Your state in misfortune is the same as your state at other times. Your attitude towards those who quite rightly criticize you and those who quite rightly praise you is the same.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, in this session we shall be talking about this world and the hereafter and how we can achieve the excess of both worlds, this world and the hereafter. When Imam Ali alayhi salam deputed Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr as the governor to Egypt, he wrote him a document as an advice to him and the Egyptians. Imam said, "Know, O people, that the righteous ones have acquired the joys of this transient world, as well as the forthcoming hereafter. They shared with the worldly people in their mundane matters, while the worldly people did not share with them in the blessings of their hereafter. They lived in this world in the best manner of living, and ate the choicest food, and so they enjoyed herein all that the worldly people enjoyed, and achieved from it what the haughty and arrogant had achieved."
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the Infallibles, lessons from the life of the Infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
We have tips on how to focus on the hereafter. And one of them is virtuous deeds establishing a path to paradise. Apart from the five pillars of Islam, establishing good relationship with family and maintaining pure friendships can also help to promote good deeds. There are many ways in which we can carry out virtuous deeds which can please Allah. Other righteous deeds include being kind to others, being hospitable to the family, friends, and neighbors, not backbiting or judging others. Yeah, we should rush to perform good deeds before something hinders us from doing it. Working towards bettering ourselves will help us improve our iman. There are many things we need to do as Muslims to ensure that our eyes, mouth, and body are in submission to Allah. We need to constantly be checking our heart and purifying it to gain a better life in the hereafter. So, we try to make the necessary steps in our life today to work towards a better chance of obtaining paradise and, most importantly, pleasing Allah by the way of Islam. This is today's special and one question. What is the price we pay for going overboard? Dear brothers and sisters, focusing on the present life with lack of consideration for the hereafter can push us to the edges of narcissism or something called the entitlement syndrome, by which psychologists refer to a state where one feels that one is rightfully entitled to the fulfillment of one's wishes and desires, and is entitled to enjoy all that life can offer, confronted with the reality of limited time in this life. Therefore, and to acquire and enjoy this life's resources, we plant the seeds of greed and dissatisfaction within us that in turn lead to injustice, deprivation of the rights of people, to the misuse of power and authority, and so on. The Prophet expressed his concern for our iman when he says, "By Allah, it is not poverty that I fear for you, but I fear that this world will be spread out in front of you as it was spread out in front of those before you. And then you will vie for it as they vied for it, and it will destroy you as it destroyed them."
There is no day that we wake up and we don't hear fresh news about some people who left this life, and some of them are young. Some of those people who left and leave this life regularly on a daily basis are young. They have ambitions, they have aspirations, they have goals, they have plans for today, for tomorrow, for next week, next month, next year. But they disappear. So God is saying in 95, وَلَا تَشْتَرُوا بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ ثَمَنًا قَلِيلًا. Do not sell the covenant of your Lord for a worthless, for a ridiculous price, for a meager price. Don't. وَلَا تَشْتَرُوا بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ. The covenant that you have with the Lord, that you made with the Lord here in this life, is very important. Don't sell it cheap. Don't exchange it with anyone, with anything. Nothing is worth the price of the covenant we made with God, to be loyal to Him. When you sign in, when you join a corporation, an office, a company, and they tell you, "We give you this much, we take care of your health insurance," some of them they take care of your transportation, some of them even your housing, "and we give you this much, but dedicate your entire being for this company, from A to Z." God said, "I sent you here with a good salary. I'm giving you a good salary, don't worry. The salary you get from me is lucrative, is unique. No one is going to give you this return on this salary. So work for me." When you sign this contract, this covenant, ahd with God, stay true to it. Don't exchange it. Don't sell it tomorrow. Keep it. Keep it.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for listening to us. That was all for today's special. Inshallah, we meet you soon on the next episode of this program tomorrow. Same channel and same time. Thank you very much and fi amanillah.
Told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.